We go to now to oral questions. Question number one is in the name of the Honourable Simon Bridges.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question's to the Prime Minister. Does she stand by all her government's statements, policies and actions?
Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Grant Robertson.
On behalf of the Prime Minister, yes, particularly the action to hold a market study into fuel prices, which has confirmed that the market is broken, margins have doubled since 2008, and confirms the Prime Minister's statement that New Zealanders are being fleeced at the petrol pump. We don't want to preempt the next bit of work, but the government will act quickly on the final report to ensure New Zealanders do not continue to pay more than they should for fuel after a decade of inaction.
Does she stand by her statement that Kiwis are being fleeced at the petrol pump? If so, does she accept that her government has legislated for 24 cents in petrol tax increases since coming to office?
Mr. Speaker, in answer to the first part of the question, yes. And I do wonder why it is that the Leader of the Opposition has decided to line up with the fuel companies against New Zealanders.
How can she say that Kiwis are being fleeced by petrol companies when her government has legislated for 24 cents of petrol tax increases since coming to office? And according to MB, petrol company margins have increased by just 0.1 cents in that time.
Mr. Speaker, I can say that, on behalf of the Prime Minister, I can say that because that is the import of the Commerce Commission's report. And I would note, in terms of the rest of the members' question, that the average increase under national for the fuel excise duty was 5.76%, and the average proposed increase from this government is 5.6%.
Does she accept that 0.1 cents for petrol companies is a world away from 24 cents and more taxes from her government?
Mr. Speaker, I accept what the Commerce Commission has said today, which is that New Zealanders, the import of what they're saying is that New Zealanders have been fleeced. And I repeat, I cannot understand why the National Party wants to get on the side of fuel companies against the interests of New Zealanders. But given that they got such an easy ride under National, perhaps I shouldn't be surprised.
Would petrol prices be more like $2 rather than $2.20 if it wasn't for all her taxes?
Mr. Speaker, the member opposite knows that every cent of the fuel excise duty goes to the cost of transport in this country, just as it did under his government and just as it does under this government. I repeat again, Mr. Speaker, I thought the National Party believed in competition, but it seems they just want to back the fuel companies.
Isn't the reality that that additional petrol tax revenue is quite simply sitting in the bank because her government isn't spending it?
Mr. Speaker, absolutely not. On this side of the House, just as previous governments have done, we have increased fuel excise duty because that's what we need to do to pay for the transport needs of New Zealand. Every cent of that goes there. What the member should be focusing on is how he can support Kiwis to make sure that petrol companies give them a fair go. I'm shocked he doesn't want New Zealanders to have a fair go.
Does she think her Minister of Corrections, the Honourable Calvin Davis, has done all he could to ensure that the man accused of murdering 51 people in the Christchurch terror attacks was unable to send out his extremist views by letter?
Mr. Speaker, the Chief Executive of the Department of Corrections has been absolutely clear that this was not handled well, that she does not have confidence in that process. The Minister is now putting the matter right. That is the focus for the government.
Can she confirm the current law states corrections officials can read and withhold mail so that no shortcomings of the law is actually apparent?
Mr. Speaker, we've been very clear that these letters indeed should have been stopped. That doesn't mean that the law is perfect. The law does need to be re-looked at. It does need to ensure that not only does it focus on individuals, but also the impact of publishing to a wider audience. It predates the overall use of email and the internet. All of those things can see the law upgraded, but nothing takes away from the fact that this should not have happened.
How can the New Zealand public have confidence in corrections in the minister following the decision to release convicted murderer Jason Rahana from prison 9 years before the end of his non-parole period, and without advising the family members of his two victims that he was released, so that they had to find out by seeing him for themselves?
Mr. Speaker, obviously the member knows that the decision is one for the parole board, not for the minister or indeed for the government. In terms of the wider matters around the circumstances of that release, clearly that was not handled well at all by the police or corrections. But I would add, Mr. Speaker, it is not new for there to be issues with corrections. Need I reference Philip John Smith and Brazil or Serco or Fight Clubs, all of which happened under the previous government? We are getting on with fixing the issues in corrections.
David Seymour.
Does the Prime Minister accept the finding of this morning's Commerce Commission draft report on petrol prices that of the $2.20 for a litre of 91, 34 cents is taken by petrol companies?
Mr. Speaker, I don't have that particular bit of paper in front of me right now, but I think all New Zealanders will understand that the report that has been provided by the Commerce Commission today is very clear that New Zealanders are not getting a fair go at the pump, and the government is going to make sure we address that.
How much does this government think that the petrol company's 34-cent share on a $2.20 litre of petrol could reduce without putting the companies that store, transport and retail petrol out of business?
Perhaps it shouldn't come as a surprise to me that Mr. Seymour is backing the petrol companies against the best interests of New Zealanders. But on this side of the House, we have now finally got the information we need to give New Zealanders a fair go, and that's what we'll do.
Point of order.
I don't think I need a point of order. The Minister will have another go at answering it. Repeat the question.
How much does this government think that the petrol company's 34-cent share of a $2.20 litre of 91 could be reduced without putting those companies that retail petrol out of business?
Mr. Speaker, those are matters that will be decided as we go through looking at the Commerce Commission's report. What I know is that that report has been clear that people right across New Zealand are not getting a fair deal. If we compare ourselves to the rest of the world, we're not getting a fair deal. We have to act on that. I am absolutely bemused as to why the opposition, who I thought believed in competition, are now saying that they don't actually want to sort that out.
So what is the government going to do now it's got this report to stop, in her words, the, quote, fleecing? And when can we expect to see those actions?
Mr. Speaker, as was announced today by the Commerce Commission, this is the interim report. We will wait for the final report to come. But I tell you what, we'll act on it, Mr. Speaker, rather than the 9 years of inaction we saw over there and what's been confirmed today, which is that the opposition wants to back big petrol companies against New Zealanders. This is a very clear fight, Mr. Bridges.
Supplementary question, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Chris Hopkins.
Supplementary to the Prime Minister, would it be possible for a future government to increase spending on road building and cut the revenue to pay for them by cutting fuel taxes at the same time?
Well, Mr. Speaker, that is indeed a very good question because, as I stated earlier, all of the money that is collected in fuel excise duty goes to transport, and it is incumbent on any political party to be able to say how they will pay for their roads if they're not prepared to increase fuel excise duty.
Given the answer to my last question about waiting for a further report, is this a case from the government that talk is cheap, but petrol prices won't be for a very, very long time?
No, Mr. Speaker. What this is a case of is of the government that's actually, A, given the Commerce Commission powers to do this, B, got the report, and C, is going to act on it. It's not a case of 9 years of giving petrol companies an easy ride, which is what we saw from his government.
So when will something happen?
Mr. Speaker, as soon as we get the final report, which will be a lot quicker than the 9 years of do-nothing from the member opposite.
What will this working group cost?
Mr. Speaker, this is not a working group, it's the Commerce Commission.
Question number two, the Honourable Paul Goldsmith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Finance. Does he stand by all of the government's statements, policies and actions in relation to the economy?
The Honourable Grant Robertson.
Yes, in the context that they were given, made and taken.
Supplementary, what policies, if any, is he considering to help Kiwis who have saved all their lives for their retirement and are now facing very low interest rates on their deposits and the prospects of negative interest rates?
Mr. Speaker, as the member well knows, the decisions around the official cash rate are made independently by the Reserve Bank. When it comes to what we're doing to support particularly older New Zealanders, I think the achievement I'm most proud of in that regard is actually restarting contributions to the New Zealand Super Fund, which the previous government had stopped for 9 years.
Does he accept that retirees receiving less interest from their savings will particularly struggle to pay this government's higher fuel taxes?
Mr. Speaker, what I know is that those who are in receipt of New Zealand superannuation are especially pleased about the fact that this government has brought in the winter energy payment, which is actually making it much easier for them to meet their cost of living right at the moment. As I stated before, the decision around the official cash rate and what that means for interest rates is an independent one made by the Reserve Bank Governor.
Does he accept that the government's winter heating bonus was simply a device to compensate older New Zealanders for the cancellation of National's tax cuts?
Mr. Speaker, what I accept is that it's a policy that has been received around New Zealand with acclaim. It was part of a package, the family's package, that meant that low and middle income New Zealanders and those on fixed incomes got a boost in their income rather than a series of unfocused tax cuts that would have delivered more than $1,000 a year to Mr. Goldsmith and myself.
Is he comfortable with the prospect of negative interest rates or printing money? And if not, what's he doing to avoid it being required?
Mr. Speaker, those are not decisions that are taken by the government. They are taken by the Reserve Bank. In terms of what we are doing is getting on with investing in our economy. For example, making sure that more than $40 billion worth of capital expenditure will be going out the door, whereas the previous government only had about $30 billion planned.
With regard to the Governor of the Reserve Bank's comments about government spending, quote, our challenge is that spending actually gets done because there are lags and delays and challenges around infrastructure spend, end of quote. Has he encouraged his Transport Minister to revisit his decision to cancel or delay dozens of road projects that were ready to go and replace them with a bunch of projects that are not ready to go?
Mr. Speaker, I back the Transport Minister's decision to have a transport strategy that works for all New Zealand across all modes of transport, and I particularly back the fact that he is coming forward with transport projects that are actually funded, not ghost roads that Mr. Bridges put forward.
Supplementary question.
The Honourable Chris Hipkins.
Can the Minister of Finance confirm that a number of the roading projects promised at the end of the tenure of the last government had not been planned, consented or funded under their government?
Speaker, I can... No. If the member might have got it right if he went a couple of days later.
How is he confident that the increased investment the Reserve Bank expects from lower interest rates will actually occur, given the very low levels of business confidence in this country right now?
Mr. Speaker, I back what the Reserve Bank Governor said. This is a great time to invest in New Zealand. This is a country that has an enormous amount of potential, and it is just really sad to see the relentless negativity of the opposition when actually there is so much to celebrate about what's happening in the New Zealand economy.
Question number three, Dr. Duncan Webb.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Finance. What recent reports has he seen on the New Zealand economy?
Mr. Speaker, on Monday, the Bank of New Zealand Business New Zealand Performance of Services Index showed New Zealand's services sector expanded in July at its fastest rate this year, with a reading of 54.7 above the historical average. This did follow a mixed performance and manufacturing index survey released on the Friday, which indicated some softness in the indicators, although production in the manufacturing industry remained expansionary. In his commentary on Monday, BNZ economist Doug Steele said following the manufacturing survey they were awaiting the services numbers with some trepidation. But he said, and I quote, "It turns out we shouldn't have been worried," written beneath the headline, "Don't worry, be happy."
What reports has he seen on how the New Zealand economy is being affected by global economic headwinds?
Well, Mr. Speaker, ASB economists on Monday released their latest quarterly economic forecasts, which show that they expect the New Zealand economy to keep growing at about 2.5% over the next year and for the unemployment rate to remain near 4%. In their commentary, the ASB said there are growing global headwinds, noting the US-China trade war and Brexit as key uncertainties. They added that slowing global growth is in part due to escalating trade tensions is likely to impact New Zealand's export performance over the coming year. Mr. Speaker, we are aware that the volatile international situation is feeding through to the New Zealand economy, which is why this government plans include supporting businesses to become more productive to keep the economy growing, which means higher wages for New Zealanders.
What measures is the government taking to make sure the economy is resilient in the face of these global headwinds?
Well, Mr. Speaker, at Budget 2019, the government announced increased investment to build more classrooms, hospitals and other infrastructure such as rail. This builds on our record investment plan for transport infrastructure, support for low and median income families in Budget 2018 and our moves to raise the minimum wage. We've also announced a number of policies to help businesses become more productive and grow, including the R&D tax credit to boost investment in new research and science, and investment in new technologies to take advantage of the opportunities created by a shift to a lower carbon economy. Mr. Speaker, we're making these investments to support activity in the economy, particularly in the face of global headwinds that are affecting many advanced economies around the world in a far more dramatic way than in New Zealand.
Question number four, the Honourable Todd McLean.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the Minister for Economic Development, does he consider manufacturing to be crucial to boosting jobs and growing our exports? And if so, is he concerned that under this government, the manufacturing sector fell into contraction for the first time since 2012?
Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Phil Twyford.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, this government is focused on supporting New Zealand manufacturers. The latest performance of manufacturing index was a mixed bag, with some components expanding as the manufacturing sector continued to produce more and some components contracting. The government is concerned that international headwinds and labour market capacity constraints continue to have an impact on manufacturing. Given that manufacturing accounts for more than half our total exports, the change in the index for new orders shows the effect that international uncertainty is having. This is similar to what we're seeing in the UK, the Eurozone, China and Japan. Similarly, manufacturers are being held back by skills shortages, with a reduction of 2,000 people a year enrolling in manufacturing and related training programs since 2009, and that's why Minister Chris Hipkins is reforming vocational education.
How does he explain export prices being at record levels whilst business confidence is falling and manufacturing is in contraction? And isn't it actually his government's policies that are responsible, not international markets or headwinds?
Well, it's true that by international standards, our manufacturing sector is particularly trade exposed because manufacturing accounts for half of our exports. The global uncertainty that you can see with Singapore, India, Indonesia and South Korea all seeing significant falls in exports. China's economy grew at the slowest pace in almost three decades in the second quarter as the trade war with the US took its toll. That uncertainty is without question flowing through into investment decisions being made by New Zealand manufacturers.
Which of his government policies does he believe are most responsible for the first contraction in manufacturing in 81 months?
Oh, Mr. Speaker, only those policies that we inherited from the former government that we haven't yet had the time to change or upgrade.
Who does he agree with? The Deputy Prime Minister who said the problems in the manufacturing sector are contrived doom and gloom, or New Zealand manufacturers who believe that the government's economic policies are responsible for this contraction?
Well, Mr Speaker, the government is concerned by the headwinds that are being experienced by New Zealand manufacturers, and we are moving as fast as we can to reorient the economy away from a heavy reliance on population growth and housing speculation. We can't turn that situation around in 18 months, but we are laying a very strong platform for New Zealand manufacturers for growth. We've got industry transformation plans underway, including food and beverage manufacturing and wood processing as two of the first four of those industry transformation plans. We've got a massive project underway to reform vocational and industry skills. There's a specific skills shift project that we've negotiated and worked out with the manufacturing industry. R&B tax credits, Reserve Bank reform. This is a very busy government.
Mr Speaker, does he agree with Martin Simpson of Fraser Engineering, who said, "I have absolutely no doubt that the costs imposed upon all businesses throughout the country are going through the roof"? And if so, which government policy is most to blame for this increased cost on manufacturers?
Well, Mr Speaker, it's not so much the cost of the government policy, but actually, as so many commentators and much data shows...
A point of order, the Honourable Simon.
Oh, Mr Speaker, my mic count taking five questions off us, supplementary questions, for interjecting during question time. I appreciate that's your rules, and that's like Mr Tabatow just yelled across the chamber, and he should have the same treatment.
Yeah, but I think the difference was he yelled while the answer was being made. There is a difference. Now, I'm going to ask Mr Tabatow, did he interject while a question was being asked?
I waited for the speaker to answer.
I take the member's word, and I will remind the Leader of the Opposition that they have gained as well as lost questions today. Right. Back to the start of the reply.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. Actually, the biggest cost that manufacturers report to us, and it's supported by the data, is actually skills shortages, based on the skill shortages that we inherited after 9 years of a failure to invest in the manufacturing workforce. The former government left us with a situation where quarterly employment in manufacturing was falling in the year prior to our government taking office. We are determined to turn that around, but it will take a little bit of time.
Question number five, the Honourable Judith Collins.
Thank you, Mr Speaker, to the Minister of Housing. Does she agree with Treasury advice that, quote, subsidies, whether to financiers, developers or home buyers, are becoming a part of the actual or expected Kiwi Build toolkit, end quote, and, quote, this is in practice inevitable until reforms to regulatory settings and more efficient construction take hold, end quote?
The Honourable Dr Megan Woods.
Mr Speaker, yes, in the broader context it was made. However, Kiwi Build is not a direct subsidy in the same way that, for example, a Home Start grant is. Kiwi Build houses a home sold at cost. This government is simply providing the development capital to get affordable homes built. But as the quotes in the member's question highlights, Treasury see any assistance in the housing market as a subsidy. On this side of the House, we make no apology for active government involvement in housing. The advice the member states refers to also states our housing is amongst the least affordable in the OECD, and the increases in housing costs have reduced home ownership, increased hardship, reduced economic growth, lowered well-being, and increased inequality. As I've told the member on numerous occasions, I'm currently resetting the Kiwi Build policy and will be taking a cabinet paper to that effect by the end of August. This is, of course, in addition to the work on regulatory settings by my colleague, the Honourable David Parker.
Will reforms to the regulatory settings and the resource management system be made during this term of Parliament?
Mr Speaker, that is not something I have ministerial responsibility for, as I've told the member before. If she wants to ask about RMA reform, she should put a question down to the Honourable David Parker.
Has she discussed them with him?
Mr Speaker, we have had David Parker give updates at our joint ministerial team meetings, but I have no ministerial responsibility for them. I suggest she put a question down to the Honourable David Parker.
Does she agree with Treasury advice that without a housing market structural fix, government programs like KiwiBuild cannot, quote, make home ownership possible for more than a limited number of middle-income households, end quote.
Mr Speaker, it is precisely why our government is getting on with the business of RMA reform and why David Parker has begun that work stream. As I've noted, that of course is coming, that question is coming from a member who was a member of a government for 9 years that failed to get it across the line.
Order. Member, resume your seat because that's not accurate. Judith Collins.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. Who does she agree with? Treasury, which says that subsidies have become part of the KiwiBuild toolkit, or the Prime Minister who said, quote, it's not about subsidising housing, end quote.
Mr Speaker, I think I answered that in my question in the broader context. Treasury do see subsidies in any form of assistance. I do point that member to the advice that Treasury gave to the National Government in 2015 that said first home subsidy through Homestart was poor value when all that would happen was likely to bring forward purchases that would otherwise happen anyway. It also warned against increasing demand in the supply constrained environment, which would raise prices, undoing much of the benefit of the subsidy.
Point of order.
A point of order, the Honourable Judith Collins.
Mr Speaker, I don't believe that was even an attempt at addressing the question. The question is very clear.
Order. I think right at the beginning she did. I probably let her run on too long afterwards. Question number six, Derek Ball.
Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Defence. What announcements has he made regarding capability for the New Zealand Army?
Mr Speaker.
The Honourable Ron Mark.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. On Saturday, I announced that the Coalition Government has approved Tranche 2 of the Network Enabled Army Programme. A capital investment of $106 million will be rolled out over the next 4 years to give our men and women in uniform the tools they need to function in today's environment. This announcement reinforces the Coalition Government's continuing commitment to the men and women of the Defence Force and our delivery of the Defence Capability Plan 2019.
What will the Network Enabled Army Programme mean for soldiers in the field?
Mr Speaker, the programme equips the Army with a wide range of hardware, software. This includes radios, satellite terminals, through modern secure digital capabilities, command posts and power generators. This will allow for better command and control on operations, getting real-time information to soldiers and commanders, maximising our resources in order to achieve more at home in the Pacific and further afield when engaged, be that in resource protection, civil defence, HADAR ops or combat. These technologies will help our people to respond to events quickly with the right assets to maximum effect whilst reducing the risks of losses and casualties.
What will Tranche 2 of the programme deliver?
Mr Speaker, Tranche 2 will extend the network-enabled army communications technologies across a light task group of around 250 personnel, including logistics, medical and engineering and other support elements. It will also expand network-enabled army capabilities to include intelligence, reconnaissance and surveillance sensor systems, and will help commanders and personnel see beyond their immediate vicinity and feed that information back into a common picture, so providing, among other things, enhanced real-time situational awareness. The work to deliver this setup and capability will commence this year.
Question number seven, Mark Mitchell. The Honourable Mark Mitchell.
Question to the Minister of Defence. How much of this equipment and technology has been made in New Zealand?
Oh, I couldn't give blow by blow, but I can tell the former minister, that as he knows from Tranche 1, very similar as was introduced in terms of the ratio of homegrown technology and technology which has to be imported to ensure that we have compatibility and interoperability, something
order.
that member was a strong champion of.
Right, question number seven, the Honourable Nikki Kaye.
Mr Speaker, question to the Minister of Local Government. Does she agree with the Prime Minister's statement? I'm sure the Minister of Local Government would be willing to help coordinate a process to enable pubs and clubs to stay open for the Rugby World Cup.
The Honourable Andrew Little.
Mr Speaker, on behalf of the Minister of Local Government, yes, I am always willing to facilitate a process. However, as the Prime Minister said yesterday, bar owners need to go directly to councils and indeed to district licensing committees for advice about licensing issues.
Mr Speaker, supplementary question. Did she have any conversations with the Prime Minister prior to post-Cabinet yesterday about her new role as being responsible for coordinating some of the work around pubs and clubs being open for Rugby World Cup?
Mr Speaker, on behalf of the Minister, I cannot comment specifically about conversations with the Prime Minister on it, but it is pretty clear that in the last 24 hours there has been some publicity about this issue. Some club patrons and indeed RSA club managers and indeed one or two politicians have brought to the public's attention, quite properly, that there seems to be a gap opening up in the provision of appropriate hospitality and bar services, in some cases late at night, for some Rugby World Cup games, at least in the 2020 version. And so it is appropriate that a responsible government looking to the best interests of all New Zealanders ensures that the licensing laws are working as intended and that we ensure that those who wish to avail themselves of the hospitality of premises such as clubs and RSAs and other humble abodes get to avail themselves of such occasions.
Can she confirm, as Minister of Local Government, she has no legal powers to change licensing arrangements so that all pubs and clubs in New Zealand are able to stay open for New Zealand Rugby World Cup games?
Mr Speaker, on behalf of the Minister, I think that this is an interesting grey area where district licensing committees are part of the local government matrix of governance in our communities, but they also must administer a law that falls under the aegis of my colleague, the Minister of Justice. But nevertheless, this is a government that works totally collegially across portfolios and across ministers, and we all take this issue very seriously. It is very important that the issues that members in this House have raised and that members of the community raise about the ability to be duly hosted and enjoy convivial environments for very important sporting events of national significance are able to enjoy themselves in the company of others in suitable premises.
Order. Before the member takes the next call, I hesitate to give ministers advice, but I would remind the minister about the indivisibility of the Crown.
Mr Speaker, will she commit to having a conversation with her colleague, the Honourable Andrew Little, about supporting David Seymour's private members' bill to resolve these issues so that pubs and clubs can have access to Rugby World Cup games?
Mr Speaker, on behalf of the Minister, of course I'm happy to admit all sorts of wonderful occasions that happened in my working day, including talking to the Minister of Justice, who it turns out has provided most astute advice on this matter and many other matters in this most indivisible of governments. And on this particular issue, there have been discussions and we take the issue very seriously.
Question number 8, Dr. Jian Yang.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Statistics. Does he agree with the Census 2018 independent reviewer's conclusion that 2 of the 4 investment objectives were not met, and the third is likely to be very challenging, and what responsibility, if any, will he take for the shortcomings of Census 2018?
The Honourable James Shaw.
Mr Speaker, in answer to the first part of the question, yes. I note that the first investment objective is to undertake a census of population and dwellings in 2018 that meets statutory requirements, and that the report finds that the census data is likely to meet all statutory requirements. In answer to the second part of the question, I did specifically ask the independent reviewers to look into the role that myself and other ministers had in the census. The report found that, quote, there was a level of optimism in reporting to ministers that was not always consistent with the level of issues being managed by the program, end quote. This finding was recently corroborated in the media by the Honourable Scott Simpson, one of the previous Ministers of Statistics. I also agree with the reviewers that, quote, it would be easy to conclude that the 2018 census was not successful. However, there are important aspects of the program that surpassed expectations and that can be used as building blocks for the future, end quote.
Order!
StatsNZ have advised that the data will be of sufficient quality to meet the most important uses of the census. This includes... Well, I guess the member doesn't believe the independent reviewer after all. This includes electoral boundaries, population projections and DHB funding. The report of the independent panel upholds that advice. I therefore disagree with the member's assertion that the census was a failure. To characterise it as such is irresponsible and contrary to the truth.
Supplementary. Can he claim to have been fully engaged in the successful transition to a digital-first census when the only press release issued before Census 2018 was to express his disappointment that Census 2018 did not include gender and sexual identities questions?
Well, Mr. Speaker, if he believes that the success of the census came down to ministerial press releases, that might explain why the previous government got it so wrong when it came to housing, if the number of press releases had something to do with the actual outcome.
Would he still advise the North End Age editor, Peter Jackson, to, quote, stop believing everything that he sees on Twitter, when Mr. Jackson said, quote, this census shows all the hallmarks of being a shambles?
Well, actually, yes, Mr. Speaker, because the number of untruths that have been spoken about the census, in particular by members of the opposition, where they have actually given lie to their own decisions in the lead-up to the census, I would suggest that people should be wary of what they read in the media and on Twitter, particularly those things that come from opposition MPs when it comes to the census.
Did he forward my report entitled Census 2018, a multifold debacle, to the Census 2018 independent reviewers? And what other contribution, if any, did he make to the independent review's report?
Now, Mr. Speaker, as soon as I was able to get a copy of the member's self-authored report, I did forward it on to the independent review team and to the Chief Executive of StatsNZ for their edification. So they have had the member's report for the entire time that they were developing their own independent report. In terms of other interactions that I had with the independent review team, like I said, right at the very start, I specifically asked them to look into the role that I or any of the five previous ministers of statistics had to do with the 2018 census, to see if there were failures of oversight and governance on behalf of ministers. In addition, I think I had perhaps three interviews with the census, including a follow-up interview for clarification around some of the answers that were given. So I believe that all of the information that I was asked to provide by the independent review was provided to them.
Question number 9, Priyanka Radhakrishnan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Social Development. What recent announcements has the government made on homelessness about providing extra support for individuals and families?
Mr. Speaker, on Sunday, Minister Farfoy and I announced additional measures to prevent and reduce homelessness. $54 million in government funding will be put into initiatives that will provide additional wraparound services for at-risk individuals and families in emergency housing and extra support for families to stay in their existing tenancies. We will be investing in intensive case managers and navigators and in more social services to support people with complex needs and unstable circumstances, including homeless families with children and people with mental health needs. Minister Farfoy is also expanding the Sustaining Tenancies Program to ensure that tenants who may be at risk of losing their tenancy receive practical support to help them get back on track.
Supplementary. What support will the intensive case managers and navigators provide?
Mr. Speaker, as part of the announcement, we are investing $31 million over the next 4 years for 67 intensive case managers and navigators. The intensive case managers and navigators will be a single, consistent point of contact for each family or individual. The case managers will be an MSD staff member and take a whole-of-person approach to people's needs, but where more support is needed, navigators will coordinate services and provide ongoing support for people with housing needs. Navigators will be from a local community organisation contracted by MSD. They will work with the community, health professionals, government agencies and NGOs to ensure people get the help they need.
Why is it important to work with social services and community partners?
Mr. Speaker, the government is working to ensure we have more people on the ground to support people with complex needs in unstable circumstances. We are committed to tackling the long-term challenges facing New Zealand, and homelessness is one of these. That's why, on top of the extra support through navigators and case managers, we are putting a further $16 million towards social services to support people staying in emergency housing, including services for mental health funds, health needs, family violence and addiction as needed. As a government, we know that people face a range of complex issues that can be a barrier to finding and keeping a home of their own. That's why we're taking a balanced and holistic approach to support them and ensure they are able to access the support they need.
Question number 10, the Honourable Louise Upston.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Social Development and asks, is the government considering changing the principles of the Social Security Act 2018 in response to the Welfare Expert Advisory Group, including the principle that, quote, work in paid employment offers the best opportunity for people to achieve social and economic well-being, unquote.
Mr. Speaker, as I've said previously in the House and as outlined in the publicly available Cabinet paper, the Welfare Overhaul Work Programme will include a review of the principles and purpose of the Social Security Act in response to the recommendations in the Welfare Expert Advisory Group report. This is currently underway, and I am unable to provide more details on the potential for changing the principles at this stage. In saying that, this government believes that for those who are able, finding a job that is sustainable and meaningful is important for long-term wellbeing. That is why this government has invested an additional $76 million in employment-focused case managers, $26 million to support people with disabilities or health conditions into employment, and nearly $50 million into mana and mahi. This reflects how seriously we take our responsibility to support people into employment.
Supplementary. Does the Minister believe that paid work best supports people to achieve social and economic wellbeing? And if not, why not?
Mr. Speaker, I think that where people are able, paid work does have an absolute role in supporting their social and economic wellbeing. What we do know, though, is that over 50% of those that are in the welfare system on main benefits have a mental health condition or disability of some sort, or are caring for someone with a health or disability of some sort, Mr. Speaker. And therefore, it is much more complicated than just doing what the previous government did, which was saying that everyone must get off benefit and into a job. We absolutely support everyone who is able to be earning, learning, volunteering or caring, and all of the policies that have been announced by this side of the House in the last 2 years reflect that commitment.
Supplementary. Does the Minister agree with the Minister of Finance, who said, and I quote, that everyone who wants to work should be able to, unquote?
Mr. Speaker, I often and more often than not agree with the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, can I also say that actually for even those that have barriers to employment, and let me refer again to those that have disabilities, we've seen the evidence to show that they do want to work. Something like 74% of those with a disability on a main benefit expressed the fact that they wanted to work. But there are barriers in their way to sometimes accessing that employment. So rather than stigmatise those on benefit, this side of the House is committed to breaking down those barriers, making that investment so that those opportunities are opened up to all New Zealanders where they are able to work.
Supplementary. Is it now her government's approach for those on job seeker benefit to choose if they want to work or not?
Mr. Speaker, that member consistently underestimates the people that are in the welfare system. The vast majority of people
who enter into the welfare system actually want to work, Mr Speaker, and that is the starting point for us on this side of the House. Mr Speaker, can I just say we are committed to helping and supporting those that are able to get into meaningful and sustainable employment. We see the role of the welfare system to support with income support where that's required, but equally to provide people with opportunities to employment. And I think actually this side of the House is doing a much better job than what the previous government did.
Question number 11, Brett Hudson.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. To the Minister of Commerce and Consumer Affairs, how much relief in cents per litre will New Zealand motorists see, if any, as a result of the draft market study into the retail fuel sector, and how does that compare to the increase in petrol taxes since the government entered office?
The Honourable Chris Farfoy.
Mr Speaker, as the member pointed out in his question, the study released this morning by the Commerce Commission is a draft study. It has made draft recommendations, and the Commerce Commission will come back to us in December with its final report and its recommendations. And the government will wait for that before we make any policy decisions. Because of that, Mr Speaker, I'm unable to address the Minister to the precision I think he would like, and therefore I cannot answer the second question in terms of a comparison. But what I can say, Mr Speaker, is that the government will act on this report because it is quite clear that New Zealanders are paying too much at the petrol pump.
Supplementary. To the Minister, did the report look at the impact of new and higher fuel taxes on consumers?
Mr Speaker, it noted fuel taxes, but if the opposition is still interested in facts, I would suggest that they look at page 80 and 81 and look at the effect that fuel taxes have had over time, and that they have remained a relatively constant component of fuel prices. But what it did show, and it has highlighted, is that margins for companies who sell fuel at petrol pumps have grown, and grown considerably under the previous government. We will not let that happen, because that, in English, means that New Zealanders are paying too much for petrol every time they fill up their car.
Parliamentary. OK, over the last 18 months, how much have fuel taxes increased in Auckland compared to the retailer margin?
Mr Speaker, I don't have that with me at this stage. But what I do know is that in terms of competition, that was highlighted by the Commerce Commission in this morning's report, is there isn't enough of it, and because of that, New Zealanders are paying too much at the petrol bowser. This was left to continue in an upward trend by the previous government, who did nothing for 9 years, and we have managed to get to this point where we have evidence that New Zealanders are getting fleeced, and we will do something about it.
The Honourable Dr Megaboyds.
Does the draft report identify a year when those margins started rising?
Mr Speaker, I believe it may have been roughly a coincidental, I think, perhaps, when the previous government took office and then went north while they were in office.
Commentary. Thank you, Mr Speaker. What has more impact on consumers? A petrol company margin that has increased by 0.1 cent since the government came into office, or legislation for an additional 24 cents per litre of taxes?
Mr Speaker, what I find interesting is on the day that the Commerce Commission has found that there are competition issues and that petrol companies are charging too high a margin to New Zealanders, that the opposition is taking their side and thinks that New Zealanders paying too much at the petrol bowser is a good thing.
Commentary. To the Minister, does he agree with the Commerce Commission that there is no guarantee that a competitive market will develop rapidly if the barriers they identified are removed?
Mr Speaker, what I would say to that is this government is going to do something about the competition issues addressed by the Commerce Commission, because we believe that that customers are getting ripped off at the petrol bowser. That is more than the previous government did in 9 years.
Question number 12, Dr Deborah Russell.
My question.
Thank you, Mr Speaker.
The Minister of Commerce and Consumer Affairs, what reports has he seen on the New Zealand fuel market?
Thank you very much, Mr Speaker. Notably, I have received the Commerce Commission's draft report that outlines the findings of their market study into the prices New Zealanders pay for their petrol and their diesel. The Commerce Commission has found that the retail fuel market is not as competitive as it could be due to the lack of an active wholesale market in New Zealand and a lack of retail competition.
What conclusions does this draft report present?
Mr Speaker, it backs up the government's concerns that New Zealanders are getting fleeced at the pump and that the market is broken. The draft report outlines that due to a lack of an active wholesale market in New Zealand, not enough retail competition is happening and New Zealanders are not getting a fair deal at the petrol pumps. The draft report also found that the high profitability of the major fuel suppliers in New Zealand is out of step with international comparisons and not consistent with a healthy marketplace. The report shows that big fuel companies' margins have been climbing since 2008, during a period where the national government did nothing and New Zealanders steadily paid more at the petrol pumps. During that lack of leadership, national
order. It's two reasons for ruling it out. One, it's a shot at the opposition off a patsy, and the second is it's getting repetitious.
Supplementary. What will the next steps be?
Thank you, Mr Speaker. Well, as I mentioned earlier to the House, this is a draft report. We shall await until December when the Commerce Commission comes back. What we can assure New Zealanders is we won't sit around on our hands doing nothing for 9 years while New Zealanders get ripped off at the petrol pumps. We will do something to make sure New Zealanders get a fairer deal.
What will be the government's response?
Awesome. Mr Speaker, as I said, this is a draft report. The Commerce Commission has proposed some options for recommendations and is looking for feedback on these issues. I encourage interested parties to take part in that consultation process, perhaps even the opposition. Mr Speaker, the government will respond to the Commerce Commission's recommendations following the report in December.
That concludes oral questions.